Welcome to Hope is Here. My name is Greg Horn, and as a lot of you know, the reason we started this program, this ministry, the nonprofit Hope is Here, was because a friend of mine, Jake, in September of 2017, unexpectedly took his own life on a Monday morning after dropping off his daughters at school. And instead of heading to his job at Toyota, he went home and parked his car in the garage after dropping off his daughters and ended his life. The thought of those two precious daughters that Jake left behind, ages 5 and 7, I could not get out of my mind over the next few months. Jake was a wonderful, wonderful guy. I had the privilege of doing his wedding 10 years before this happened, and just wanted to do something to help stop people from losing hope and committing suicide, ending their life. So in December of 2017, I started Hope is Here, and man, I'm really excited today because we've got somebody that's going to, I believe, be able to help educate us, look at some of the scientific aspects, but also from the faith part of it. And then, unfortunately, has experienced it personally. Dr. Melinda Moore is our guest today. She's an assistant professor of psychology at Eastern Kentucky University. She's also the clinical division director of the American Association of Suicidology. And Dr. Moore, not obviously has academic credentials to talk about this topic today, but she also has professional experience, and she has a counseling practice that she's been doing and meeting with people. But she's also, unfortunately, has personally experienced the pain of losing a loved one to suicide. Dr. Moore, thanks so much for being here today.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
Well, one of the things, until we met a couple of months ago, I didn't realize that there was actually suicidology. When did this scientific research begin and this field start to develop?
Yeah, so the science of suicidology is only about 50 years old. And actually, we have a lot of prominent people in the area who are involved in suicidology, the science and the study of suicide prevention, intervention, and management. But suicidology started actually by a gentleman by the name of Dr. Edwin Schneidman, and he was part of a group of people, a psychologist and a psychiatrist, who did the autopsy, psychological autopsy of Marilyn Monroe. But it was in the 60s that they began to really study suicide systematically, trying to understand why people would die by suicide, but then also how to intervene and then also how to manage it. So it's a pretty new science, but it's one that's not really been translated into clinical practice as much as we would like. So part of my job has been to translate a lot of the science of suicidology. How do we understand people and what might place them at risk, and then how do we treat them? So I'm part of an effort nationally to translate this into clinical practice, both at Eastern Kentucky University in the Department of Psychology, where I train doctoral level clinicians, but then also I go out nationally and I train clinicians across the country in a suicide focused treatment called the Collaborative Assessment and Management of Suicidality, or CAMS. So we do have treatments available for people who are suicidal, such as CAMS, such as DBT, dialectical behavior therapy, and then also cognitive behavioral therapy. So we do have treatments available. It's not hopeless. And what we typically do in clinical practice is we either hospitalize people immediately when they say that they're suicidal, or we just send them to a prescriber and we give them antidepressants. But actually, those may not be the best approaches in all cases. And so knowing somebody who's a professional who can treat suicide is really important for those individuals who are suicidal and those loved ones who care about them and want to get them the best treatment.
Well, we're going to be elaborating that more over the next couple of programs. And I talked about our introduction. You obviously have the academic credentials and done a lot of research and still involved in doing that on the academic end. But this personally has hit at home too. You've been exposed and lost a loved one. Unfortunately, do you mind sharing about your personal situation?
Yeah, I mean, this suicide changed my life. I mean, it opened my eyes. It made me more compassionate, but it also changed my life professionally. So while it was the most devastating experience of my life, I lost my husband, Connor, to suicide 22 years ago. Connor was a graduate student at Ohio State University, and he died very unexpectedly. Did not expect him. Was unaware that he was thinking about suicide, and so he died unexpectedly. And I was working in public health at the time, planning on going back to school myself in a completely different field, not clinical psychology. And I really had to dig deep and try to understand. It took me a couple of years to get through the experience because the experience was unbelievably painful, not just emotionally, but also physically. It was a physically painful experience. And I realized pretty quickly that this was a different cause of death. You know, people treated me differently. Not only did I feel enormous guilt, I did not know why he killed himself, but I felt guilt already because I was a caregiver. But I also felt a lot of shame, a lot of embarrassment. People definitely did not treat me the same way. And I also had PTSD symptoms. It's not unusual for the suicide bereaved or suicide survivors, we sometimes call them in this country, to have kind of PTSD-like symptoms, nightmares, hypervigilance, sleep problems, depression. It's an unrecognized traumatic event. We, when people die by cancer or car accident, there's an explanation. But when somebody takes their own life, it's a very difficult, troubling cause of death and way of dying. And so it leaves the survivors oftentimes not understanding it, but yet feeling very traumatized by it. And this is, it may also even place that individual at risk for suicide themselves. Like I said, this changed my life. A couple years later, got into suicide prevention. And having worked in public health, I kind of put a public health hat on when I got involved in suicide prevention. So I understood that approach. But I ended up going into psychology, clinical psychology, became a clinical psychologist, and joined a research team at the University of Kentucky with Dr. Julie Serrell, who's the president of the American Association of Suicidology and a preeminent suicide bereavement researcher. And we found that individuals who are exposed to individuals who die by suicide, particularly those individuals who feel close to that individual, they will have higher levels of depression, anxiety, suicidal ideation, and then another study shows that they also have higher levels of suicide attempt. So knowing and feeling close to somebody being impacted by this death can have significant health effects on you as well.
Well, that's the thing that I think people, if somebody's listening and, you've lost hope and you just thought, I'd be better off not alive. I was there at one point in my life about 20 years ago. I lost a $10 million company to a flood, had to file bankruptcy, lost my home because I put it up for the business loan, and my wife left me for an old high school boyfriend. And so all the things that were my identity, they were gone. And so I remember going to a counselor, and they shared what they said, I know, and don't blame me for being hopeless, Greg, but I want to say something to you. If you end your life, you commit suicide, you can just take like a knife to all your family's and close friends' face and just slash on the side, and they will carry a scar for the rest of their life because of the hurt of you doing this. And I've never forgotten that. And as I thought about that, and you shared yourself. I mean, you lost your husband. Didn't see it coming. And that's the thing with suicide. I don't think very seldom do people see it coming, do they?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think in retrospect, if they learn about suicide and they kind of, there are these risk factors and warning signs. Unfortunately, risk factors and warning signs don't tell us a whole lot about how to predict suicide. So they kind of help us retrospectively understand why somebody might be at risk, but it really doesn't tell you, why they died by suicide or why, what was weighing on them or what was driving their suicidal thoughts and feelings. So, only about 15% of people who die by suicide leave a suicide note. I think there's probably been some sort of communication of intent in some way, but people, unless you're going to tell somebody, hey, I'm thinking about suicide, or unless people around them know to ask the question, are you having thoughts of suicide? Are you thinking about killing yourself? We won't know. We can't read people's minds. And so I think it's really important. It's incumbent upon us to all get trained. There's this wonderful gatekeeper training. There's a gatekeeper training called QPR. There's ASSIST. There are a lot of really good gatekeeper trainings out there, and we do this at EKU on campus. We're trying to get everybody at EKU trained to really kind of notice when somebody's a little bit off and then what to say to them and then what to do, not to leave them alone, get them professional help, bring them to the counseling center or to the EKU psychology clinic. And so I think, we can't know when somebody's going to try and attempt suicide, but what we can do is be prepared, and if we think something's a little bit off about somebody, know what to say to them.
Well, I think, you know, you shared some of those things, but I just want to reiterate in case somebody's like, wow, man, I heard that, but I wasn't listening, you know. If you do sense that, you've got a friend, coworker, family or neighbor that you're just, like you said, just doesn't seem like they're themselves, and you ask them if they're okay, and if, you know, they kind of deny it, but, you know, you say, are you really okay? And they just, you know, they say, you know, I just don't feel like living anymore. What should you do? I know you shared a little bit, but kind of make it real simple, two or three steps that you should do if somebody tells you that, hey, I've just lost hope. I really don't want to live anymore.
Yeah. I think, well, number one, finding out, do they have a plan? Asking them, well, have you thought about how you'd kill yourself? And then finding out if they have access to means. Now, I would not turn any, you know, somebody, a civilian, into a counselor at that moment. It's really important to get professional help. There is a national toll-free number, the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline. It's open 24/7. You can call them and you can ask them in that moment, you know, what should I do? And they can connect you with resources. So it's 1-800-273-8255. There's also a crisis text line, 741-741. Just text that number, 741-741. And they can also help you figure out what to do in that moment. But it's really important if somebody says, yeah, I'm thinking about suicide, you know, yeah, I'm, you know, I might have a plan, you know, I might have means. You should not leave them alone. They should not be left alone. And I think just access, you know, these great free public confidential resources, and then figure out your game plan in terms of, you know, where to take them, whether it's to a professional's office, whether it's to the emergency room, whether it's to a family member's, you know, but they will help you figure that out.
Well, and I just want to say for men, I know sometimes, you know, we've got guy friends and, you know, maybe they share they are hurting and just we say, oh, just toughen up or, you know, you're going to be okay, shake it off. And I think we're just learning because, you know, so many more men are committing suicide. I know we can spend, I mean, your research shows, I mean, there's a high percentage of men with people that commit suicide rates. Is that right?
Yeah, so about 75% of the people in America who die by suicide are males. And the reason that it's a higher preponderance of males is because they tend to use more lethal means. You know, men are also not great help seekers. You know, they want to be John Wayne. They pull themselves up by their bootstraps. They really believe that they can solve their own problems. And unfortunately, you know, we're all connected. And we really also should be, you know, when we're in those vulnerable moments, should also be reaching out as well. And that's kind of part of the problem. And one of the reasons we have to start talking about suicide, because this lack of help seeking among men is really important. It's not a weakness to seek help. And I think a lot of men in the U.S. think it is. So unfortunately, men use more lethal means. Women tend to attempt suicide, though, more frequently than men. So while men die by suicide more frequently, women attempt more frequently. And unfortunately, in the United States, women are using more and more lethal or what we consider irreversible means. And so that's also really problematic. Again, why we should be talking about this publicly.
Well, and that's why we're doing Hope is Here, and that's why we're talking about this today, is because so many times, over to me at least, I'm 53, it's just that was kind of things that people didn't want to talk about, you know, suicide, mental illness. But unfortunately, because of the alarming increase in suicide rate, it's becoming more an open conversation, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. So suicide has been for a long time in the top 10 causes of death, but it's number 10. About 47,000 Americans, over 47,000 Americans die by suicide, according to the latest statistics. The thing that's scary, though, is that it's the one cause of death that is not static. All the other top 10 causes of death are static. Suicide is not. It continues to increase. And so that's really problematic. And again, it kind of speaks to the urgency of talking about this publicly.
Well, that's why we're doing that today. And I want to remind you, if right now you've lost hope and you're like, I need to talk to somebody right now, there's a 1-800 number. It's 1-800-273-8255. It's 1-800-273-8255. Or 1-800-273-TALK, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. It's free, confidential crisis counseling. Also, you can just text somebody if you'd rather do it through texting. I know a lot of people like to communicate through text. Just text 741-741. That's 741-741. Once again, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, support help for those in crisis thinking about suicide. We're going to continue our conversation with Dr. Melinda Moore, talking about this topic of suicide, about what you experience, not only the people, the loved ones that are still left behind. So I hope you'll tune in with us tomorrow. I'm Greg Horn, and this is Hope is Here.
Taking care of Central Kentucky's floral needs for over 25 years, Creations by Karen features floral arrangements for every occasion, from anniversaries, corsages, Valentine's Day, as well as birthday gifts. You can count on Creations by Karen to deliver beautiful anniversary flowers, new baby gifts, bridal arrangements, or sympathy flowers. Contact them today at creationswithak@karen.net. That's creations-by-karen.net.